Hello and welcome to IMP's WWE Adventures Podcast and the Social Suplex Podcast Network. You can help out the network by leaving us a 5-star review. You can also give a donation directly through Red Circle and become one of the amazing community by joining the Social Suplex Discord. Link is in the description. Listen to the other top-notch shows here on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. One Nation Radio, Keeping It Strong Style, All Things Elite, Wrestling Art with Chris Things, Trish and Sarah, and Tunnel Talk. My name is Matt Mayer, aka Imp, and this is your quick look back at the WWE week that was. 30 minutes for an easy listen on WrestleMania weekend, baby! Before we get into Raw and Smackers, firstly, I'm recording this a day earlier than normal on Wednesday, so just like with Trish and Sarah earlier in this week, I expect all the wrestle news to happen the day after I record. And secondly, on the Vince McMahon leaked letter, I'll direct you to Post Wrestling's coverage. Today on their YouTube channel, Pollock had General Grant's lawyer to talk about it all. A highly recommended listen to, you know, get the victim side of the attempted victim blaming. I won't be talking about it here, but I do very strongly direct you into Post Wrestling's direction. Go and watch that video. It's up on their YouTube channel. It was live today. Also, a bunch of older wrestling guys saying a lot of dumb shit. We've got Bully Ray talking about the Kenny Omega should have gone to WWE to sit under the learning tree of Randy Orton to understand psychology. This is just like one of the dumbest things I've heard in a while. Yeah, that's one of the things where it's just like, yeah, just totally ignore that. And Kenny Omega himself had the absolute best reaction to that, where it's just like, yeah, probably would have learned things from Randy Orton, because every time we go out there is a learning experience, my friend. Just the most chill, non-enraged reaction at all. Wrestling world doesn't deserve Kenny Omega. Also, the CM Punk had his interview on Ariel Helwani. Is that his last name? In my notes I've got it as Ariel Helwani, because I can never remember what his name is. And it's one of those things where I just refuse to Google it. Because I was like, I can do this, I can remember his name. But it's Ariel Helwani. Anyway, we'll talk about that later when he comes up in the actual shows of the WWE. But Punk early in the week, there's a lot of reframing of past incidents to conveniently make himself look better, to shine himself in a better light, which we could, like, if you've watched any interviews with Punk before, that he knew he does this all the time. Very blatant that is exactly what Punk is doing. He's changing events to make him look better. And it's very see-through that has happened. So arguably his interview with Ariel backfired on him. If he hadn't mentioned any of that stuff, especially with Dave Meltzer, just like, no, yeah, he was the guy who was leaking that. So, there's no fan reaction to the It's Real Glass stuff if CM Punk doesn't leak that to the dirt sheets. So he's leaked that, so it can have an effect by him doing it. And then he can then warp the story to then twist it onto the other guy. So, yeah, it's a lot of reframing of past stuff. But the thing that stirred a lot of conversation was saying that guaranteed contracts in wrestling were bad, but wrestlers should be paid off of the house and all that stuff to try and invigorate them to sell the house. And whilst, of course, there's the big, massive, hypocritical note there that Punk himself is currently on a guaranteed contract, and the way that AEW operates was the entire point was to be different. So the entire point was to not do that, to actually give the wrestlers guaranteed money. This week has gone against what AEW had been doing for quite a long time, but instead of releasing people from contracts, to actually just let them see out those contracts. A lot more assured money in wrestling rather than the gamble, which is, For me, it immediately fell into the bracket of, this is how WWE are doing it, therefore that's how you should be doing it. When AEW's entire point of existence was to be something different, not just in terms of what the product was like on the screen, but behind the scenes as well. Try and operate differently behind the scenes, not just in front of the camera. What seems to be the thing here is, CM Punk tried to make backstage AEW like backstage WWE, because that's how the successful company does it, therefore that's how you must do it, when the entire point of AEW was to be different. And to kind of bounce off of that, Cody, who's not going to get anywhere near as much traction because we know how things work on the internet, the negative always, not only does it get more clicks and interactions in the moment, but it stays in your brain a lot more than the positives do. That's just the way that it's, I've forgotten what the phrase is called, but it is a genuine thing. Cody today, he had his interview on Ariel, and Ariel brought up the comments that Punk had said. But Cody's entire point was just that's not how he would describe his time in AEW at all. He was obviously there from the ground up as a part of this industry-changing thing. Because they're not just competition, they completely changed the industry for the better for the wrestlers. The amount of power that wrestlers have now is so much more higher than it was before AEW existed. They've dismantled the monopoly. Wrestlers have an option now. It's not, you do what WWE says, otherwise you've not got a career in wrestling. Like, no, you've got options now. They have power, and stuff like Mercedes Moné and Okada and Will Ospreay this year, what they did with their contracts and the way that that will have an effect on WWE wrestlers being able to ask for more money. And you can see Becky Lynch doing it right now. It's not even taking a second. After you see what Mercedes Moné is getting paid in AEW, Becky Lynch can really push that argument of there is no reason why a star like her, who draws in the money like her, should not be getting the same amount of money as a top guy. And she's outwardly saying that. It's already happening. To then crap over AEW's practices, where, for me, the point of the company existing is such a wider effect on the whole industry, not just, oh, they're competition, so they're equal bad. Like, that's such a small-worlded minded view on the entire, like, massive shift that their existence does. Even, like, if you don't like their products, like, that's one thing. Yeah, fair dues, whatever. But their existence in the industry as a whole is a net positive. Whether you prefer the shows or not, it doesn't matter. For the people in the industry, it's a net positive. Anyway, I realised that could very easily have been quite a long opening segment. But this is the show before WrestleMania. So in terms of me trying to keep this stuff short, let's keep this stuff short because I myself am busy. I have less time for editing than normal. So let's jump over to SmackDown in the Mohegan Sun Arena in Connecticut.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
8 days till WrestleMania was last Friday. And we start things off with the build to WrestleMania with Jade Cargill's SmackDown
this
debut.
Is an all out assault. No. The storm is here!
The Bloodline taking the night off, so we get a much needed Smackers focused on building the other WrestleMania matches. First off, Jade Cargill's Smackers debut. Nick Aldis bringing out the storm. Her theme, like a WCW note reversal ripoff of her AEW theme, was that, hey, when ain't broke, don't fix it. Jimmy Hart's legacy lives on. It's about damn time the storm has arrived. She comes out and she cuts a promo, looking amazing, obviously, which is with Jade Cargill. Your first impression is how she looks, then the second impression, because she's like, there is nobody like her. And then there's her presence, and then there's her charisma as well. And I personally feel like it's really smart to get her charismatic side out first before she jumps into action later in the show. Which brings us to Bianca Belair versus Dakota Kai. Damage Control's second main event in 2 weeks. Bianca Belair dragged right back into the fight with the faction she had more than enough of in 2002. Dakota getting a bigger chance to shine herself too with her coming out without her faction mates. A tad of a funny with Kai unable to grab Bianca's braid to yank her down from the corner, then both laughing and the Kiwi having to cover her mouth as it just completely fails. Bianca with an impressive win in a surprise clean finish. What we've been conditioned to with the Damage Control over the past, like, how many long time? Suplexing an apron Dakota back into the ring, nailing an awesome-looking KOD. A really strong win look for Bianca. Asuka and Kairi out to utilise the numbers advantage. Not even Naomi enough to swing things into their favour. The fans chanting for Bayley. Instead, the storm is here. Paying off what they set up earlier. Jade now getting her first taste of an in-ring display, making quick work of Damage Control and nailing both Jaded and the reverse straddled pin. Like, I don't know what else to call it. I mean, I do, but I don't know what PG name to call it. Reverse straddled pin it is. Looks awesome and amazing visual to give the crowd a great first impression of Jade Cargill hitting her actual moves in this ring. Io, in terms of what she was doing, she had a nice like two-camera VTR giving her the chance to chat some shit. Bayley then attacking after the lass had finished talking to camera, leading into a fighty punch-punch with sound effects. Like, not every new production idea is perfect. That one, putting punch-punch sound effects on a backstage beatdown, not needed. Not needed. Don't need to do that. Yeah, but in terms of like what this did, for me, did a really good job. You get across Jade Cargill's presence, you get across her charisma, then you get across her ability just to beat people up in a ring. And having her side with Bianca Belair and Naomi really gives like a surge of momentum to the people who are going to be taking on Damage Control. I've not looked at the updated cards to see if there is that six-woman match at WrestleMania, just to like get damage control away from the champions and make sure it definitely will be one-on-one, which basically guarantees that they're going to be busy or tied or beaten up or whatever, so that then explains why it's a one-on match for the women's title. But they did a really good job of getting Jade in there, because that question has been, why the hell is it taking so long to get Jade onto SmackDown? And if it just was so you could just have this massive injection of strength, injection of momentum for the good side team, like right at the death to swing us into WrestleMania. Yeah, good first impression. Randy Pandy, Randy Orton and Kevin Owens kicked off the show, losing to Pretty Deadly. Logan Paul out-costing them the win. Randy busy setting up to drop the boys off at the announce desk. Paul using vintage Orton to his advantage to strike KO in the jaw with the brass knucks. Randy just watching the replay as we're in this new age of smart baby faces. The replay showing Logan hiding back under the ring, so guess I'll... best just to drag him out then. Pretty Deadly saving the champion with the numbers odds, but they eat an RKO and a stunner each instead. A lovely little segment ending with Orton chasing Paul out the arena backstage and into the parking lot, with the villain stealing a car and driving off all in one shot. Huzzah, the done is dead. That entire bit that I just described, all one shot. Amazing to see. Just chasing him through the crowd, out of the arena, backstage, to the parking lot, into the car, and even Kevin Owens catches up right at the end of it, and as they're kind of graphic switching into the next segment, it's still that same one shot. And let's move on to the WrestleMania 40 tag team qualifier stuff for this show. Theory and Waller versus Street Profits. For the second week in a row, the dickheads' opponents are shown to be powering and flying, only for feuding interference to cost a victory. Footage of B-Fab and Bobby Lee Lashers laid out in their locker room backstage plays on the Titantron, drawing Dawkins towards the Titantron like a moth. It's wrestling logic rules. Ford's Frog Splash met with knees from Theory. 1, 2, 3. AOP and Cross in for the beatdown after the bell, just to solidify that message. Beat up Bobby angrily, marching out in rage, but he's not that mighty. Held in position by the big lads for Cross's charging forearm to the back of the head. And last week I was talking about how I would prefer the Schmoz match to go to LWO versus Legado de Fantasma, but it looks like we are instead getting Santos and Dominic Mysterio versus Rey Mysterio and Dragon Lee. But we are getting the Schmoz match with Cross and Friends versus Bobby Lee Lashes and Friends. And I've described this feud as a dead dud, but you can still have a fun Schmoz match. Like, it's one of those ones where on the card itself, you just place it in the correct spot, and it could just be like a fun little schmoz. It's destined for fourth, that's what I'll say. After a white-hot third match or something, just to really electrify the crowd, you then have this just fun schmoz. Not in the Darby Allin spot right before the main event. Not that. But if you put it in fourth on the card, it'll be fun. It'll carry the momentum. And you get this feud done with. In terms of the other match for the tag team qualifiers, Santos Escobar first came out. It's all connected together. Baddie, villain, picked on little kids. It was him. He put Rey Mysterio on the shelf. Out comes Dom Dom Mysterio for the WrestleMania tag team set up against Rey Rey and a tag partner of his choosing. Introducing the newest member of the LWO, Dragon Lee. A scuffle ensues and we're set for Dragon Lee's WrestleMania debut. That scuffle leads immediately into Legado de Fantasma lads Berto and Garza facing New Catch... Oh no, it's Berto and Angel, isn't it? Versus the New Catch Republic. Some lovely British innovation from the Birmingham lads. Running riot over the lightly beaten lads, the baddies having to use their cheeky smarts to snatch a way in. A lovely double slam from Berto and Garza from up high to bait. But a DDT counter sold amazingly by Berto swung favour right away from Del Fantasma. Angel caught up and Birmingham for the win. Dunn and Bate finally making it onto a WrestleMania card. I mean, I know technically Dunn was there last year. When Sheamus came out, Dunn got to go on the stage because he was doing his butch stuff. So he's out on the stage and Ridge Holland has to hold him back and Sheamus goes out for his match. But this time he gets to be there for the fun ladder match. AJ Styles with his first proper words for LA Knight since attacking him at Elimination Chamber. Knight turning up at the man's house last week. The action that's pushed AJ over the edge. Blaming the fans for the lad's actions. Knowing that the man will be hiding out somewhere to try and attack him. Like a not greatly executed fake fan jump in. Just the attempted fake outs to be like, oh, is that LA Knight? Oh, no. But what it's setting up is that one of the security guards is LA Knight. Because nay... Knight was actually hiding as one of the security guards into our second usage of the Titantron to solve a riddle of the night. Takes his stuff off and beats up AJ Styles as AJ Styles watches him take off his disguise in the Titantron, and then they have a big old brawl and it goes LA Knight's way, who's then on the announce desk and the crowd right behind him. And for me, that's like the final site for WrestleMania. You don't really need to do any more build this week on SmackDown. Yeah, and that was the final bit for the SmackDown show. The reason I kind of like blasted through SmackDown this time is just because it's an entire night building up all of the other little things that all needed to get built. Time was needed for all of this stuff, and with the Bloodline stuff playing out on Raw currently, it's absolutely perfect timing just to give so much momentum to all of these other notes. And then you can make the women's title match feel more important by having them main event. And they have, to be fair, they've been having their main event last week as well. And now that it has been established, what is definitely main eventing each night, they've started to give more momentum. Now that it's like, okay, just so you know, the women aren't main eventing. Now we're actually going to start main eventing them on SmackDown to give them more momentum now that we know they feel to play for WrestleMania. Other notes, Tiffany Stratton with a nice little VTR play. Carrying the burden of perfection is not as easy as I make it look. Like, a great little villain line. The fans are going to keep cheering Tiffy time for her, though. Like, she's so incredibly over. So there is that. And my other note is that I was watching WrestleMania from last year, and it immediately hit me how much I just disliked the Kevin Dunn production era. Just all of the tropes are all there for the WrestleMania one. And he also realised just how boringly the ring is shot. Like, just how flat everything is. And there's, like I'm talking about, we talk about with Raw and things, where they really make the crowd feel big by just having that ring just to the left of shot. And often that's great for the WrestleMania season, because that means on the top right of the screen you can get the WrestleMania logo. But it also just gives that feeling of the size of the crowd. And watching the Dunn era, everything feels so flat. And he films the camera. He would also film the camera like slightly to the left. But when I say slightly to the left in that one, I mean the bulk of the shot. Then he got a little bit to the side to maybe catch ringside. The way he films the ring in terms of the scale of the audience is incredibly boring. Incredibly flat. Even, to be fair, there are some from last year's WrestleMania, some amazing shots from up high. For me, it's the WrestleMania 3 shot, where it's from way up high. And it's another flat shot. It's with the lens, the eagle eye lens, so you can really pick up just the size and the scale of the arena. And for me, that's a really good shot. And they linger on it as well, especially during the Edge Finn Balor match, where for Finn Balor to pick up his purple flares, they cut to that show both times. And you feel just the size of this place. But it is also flat. So it's a weird one where technically, it's like, yeah, it does show off the grandeur of the whole arena and the whole occasion. But it is also another flat shot. I feel like with the current Raw product, sort of WWE product, the way that they film it, is you would probably still get that feeling. And if they incorporate that shot, it's not the end of the world, because you've got other shots showing other dimensions. Whilst in the Dunn production, that was the shot showing the dimension, and then you're back to flat and relatively low. Like, it really hit me how much I didn't like the Dunn production, and just watching a match and being taken out of it by way too many cuts. It just really hit me. It's like, yeah, doing the production has come on leaps and bounds in like the 3 months he's not been there. And that generally got me excited to see what a WrestleMania could look like with the current production, which is the level of creativity. And it's WrestleMania, that they go all out on everything, which makes me truly believe that they're going to go all out on production as well, which gets me generally excited just to see what they're going to do this weekend. Anyway, with that said, let's jump over to Monday Night Raw, 5 days out from this one.
You saw the smile on Seth's face! Cody and Seth set the trap! Here comes Rhodes! And here we go! The American Nightmare hanging out The Rock! Payback! Payback!
The Rock out in his Moo Moo Cow vest. The things passed me right for me to say. Out for his self-applauding promo after beating and whipping Cody last week. A whole making kids cry bra video. Cutting back to an arena, chanting Rock's name. I said it earlier in the show, wrestling fans are weird. There are times in life when people are talking shit when they shouldn't be talking shit. The Rock and WWE supplying weekly new clips for Twitter shaming use. Cody had a banger last week as well. Setting the stage for the WWE Undisputed Champion Roman Reigns, he's come to Raw to acknowledge his family. Running down Cody, how at WrestleMania they go to shut the door on Cody's WWE tenure. But it's Seth Rollins' theme that hits to enter through the crowd, proposing the biggest match for the biggest Raw against either The Rock or Roman Reigns. So, onto the main event of Seth Rollins versus Solo Sikoa. The crowd were not that hot after they found out this would actually be the match. You ain't gonna fight The Rock, boy. You ain't gonna fight Roman Reigns, boy. You've got Solo Sikoa. Bloodline rules as well, to give the fans, just to let them know what Bloodline rules actually is, and to just give them that taste of that interference and everything that Seth Rollins is up against. I mean, it's just a no DQ, mate. Like, it's not that complicated, but in a very natural way, instead of having Michael Cole having to list out rules like a TNA special match, he instead, like, we've seen what Bloodline Rules is. We all know what Bloodline Rules means for definite now. We know what it is. We know what the stakes are for WrestleMania, which, for me, this is all setting up. It's exactly what I would do as well. That's kind of why I'm applauding it, because it's what I would do if I was there in those production meetings. I would do this so the fans know the consequences of Bloodline Rules when Cody and Seth Rollins lose. Seth Rollins is there as a pin eater. He's been screaming it, and that's the perfect setup for his match with Drew, whichever way that one goes, and it's a perfect setup just to make the mountain the most difficult climb possible for Cody Rhodes, which also sets up not just interferences on behalf of the Bloodline, but interferences on behalf of Cody Rhodes in a full-on crazy... People have been saying the Avengers look to the left when out comes Steve Austin and John Cena. Like, I'm totally on board for that. Totally on board for all of that nonsense. This match, though, was Rollins' first televised match since his knee injury, immediately becoming a ringside scuffle, Seth just launching chairs at the lad before happily obliging to the modern cheap pop, the table. Don't worry, he paid the price. Pro wrestling rules state, whoever sets it, gets it. Samoan drop off Brett's rope crashed old Setherton through the wood. The sunset flip powerbomb through the second table looked damn great, though. A top-notch setup for the crowd to be hot for the stomp, only to call out Jimmy for the interference. Jay out for the babyface save, chasing his brother to the back, only for The Rock to crash him down, tricking us that he and Roman had both just left earlier in the show, which was entirely believable. We've done our promo for WrestleMania. We're just both going to leave now. You're getting Seth Rollins versus Solo Sikoa. Suck it. The crowd calling for him and the music with one hell of a pop for Cody Rhodes charging out to beat up the final boss, Rollins and Rhodes beating Rock up and teasing a Rock Bottom on the announce table, only to be saved by Reigns, who also hadn't left. It's not a big way. You can just believe. It's like, okay, Rock's not left, but surely Roman's left. Roman just does his promo and leaves all the time. Surely that's just what's happened, right? The crowd incorrectly reading that CM Punk would make the save. Like, hey, wrestling fan intelligence isn't at an all-time high. We're getting there. We're getting there, slowly. The tease for WrestleMania spots completed, now completely swinging back into Rock and Roman's beatdown. Rocky with a Cody weightlifting belt, whipping both baby faces before giving Roman the reins to whip him to, taking Rock's beating from last week and bringing it in front of the fans. Cameraman in the ring to give us a proper shot of Rock whipping Cody. Those dramatic lessons from Cody's MJF feud coming into good use. You couldn't ask for a better final beat before Mania, as Roman lifts his title and Rocky lifts the nightmare weight belt that he's just whipped both of the opponents with. Such a good, like, start to the show to set all of this up, where you just fully believe that Seth was always going to face out of Sikoa. Yeah, to be fair, it is WrestleMania this weekend. No, you want to make sure that nobody gets hurt. So why not? If you're going to risk somebody, but, like, Solo Sikoa is not the worst in the world. If Seth gets somewhat hurt, it's a tag match. You can work around it, even though it's meant to be the workhorse. Like, you can still work around it. It's not the end of the world. But it was, for me, the best final beat that they could have possibly done with what they set up. And it was a great bookending to the show. Perfect way just to get you fully motivated for WrestleMania. And for me, this works really well as the final show before WrestleMania, not just the final Raw, but actually for the main event, because now you can just use SmackDown to do a little bit more build for those other lower, like, mid-card matches. Yeah, SmackDown focus on that, on building WrestleMania. I would, like, you make SmackDown good viewing, and, like, you're happy you watched it if you did, but it's not necessary viewing. Don't have to have made sure you watch SmackDown. If, like, if you're going to WrestleMania, and you're going to be a little bit busy on Saturday, the likelihood is you might not have time to watch SmackDown, so it makes sense, you know, just to make sure. Don't make it compulsory viewing. Just make it the extended edition of the WrestleMania build. Like, if you want more, you've got 2 hours of extra stuff. But if you don't watch it, it's not the end of the world. As for the WrestleMania Night Raw, commercial-free first hour. Why does Ariel, what's it, have the Nottingham Forest emblem on his laptop? I'm a Nottingham Forest fan. I've been a Nottingham Forest fan since my granddad took me to see them in 2002/03 season. Is he a Forest fan this year? Is that his thing? Am I legally not allowed to dislike him? The goddamn football bylaws. I guess, well, he really is the best journalist. He's a Forest fan. Legally, I have to regard everything he says. At least for a while, he is a Forest lad. He was used in the very Ripley and Becky Lynch, with both of them having their interviews and then using that to further their storyline. I would say it worked really well in setting up the Rhea Ripley and Becky Lynch stuff. Like, this is the stuff that dates really well too, this kind of setup. When you go back and watch the older WrestleManias, because this is a capture of the era in terms of how these interview stuff or things are done. And then when you jump 20 years into the future, like, this will feel like this time period when you go back and watch it. Aside from that, we also had the New Day and DIY versus Judgment Day. Hey, you get a commercial-free first hour, you're going to get DIY. It happens every time. Six of the WrestleMania 40 Tag Team Ladder Match lads, plus Donut and Dom. Johnny Gargano taking risks and diving right into the corner of the announce desk. He's all right, listeners. He's absolutely fine. Priest means business now, calls Cole, as Senor Money in the Bank chokeslams one lad, kicks another in the face, before launching Ciampa for the win. The champions get a very strong win before WrestleMania, which means they're losing. I do like the idea that they could possibly hold on to one of the titles, but the way that it was made very clear, the way the ladder match is going to work is both belts pulled down separately. If you want to hold both belts, you're going to have to pull down both belts. One belt pulled down, and then the other belts. And I guess the way they could just do that, instead of you like, why would you not pull them all down? It's like, well, you've only got two hands, so you can have a team pull two down, then get knocked off the ladder, so there's still two there, that sort of thing. Yes, there's the other world of, well, what if they pull down one of each title? It's like, that's why. You just don't book that. You just don't write that. Yes, it's a, when you're thinking about it, it's like, oh yeah, when I think about it, Kofi Kingston and Xavier Woods could just pin themselves and then win the titles. Just keep the titles that way. They don't have to tag it anywhere else. Yeah, but if you don't want that question to enter people's minds, just don't book it. Just don't do it. It's absolutely fine. If you don't want that confusion of what if they pull down one belt of each, just don't have people tease it. Just don't do that. Sami Zayn and Chad Gable, Performance Center training montage. I love this. Chad running Sami hard, building to Sami finally breaking and admitting his fear of failure, using how they've both had family members crying at ringside after losing the big one, relaunching it into more training montage with fire. Bloody great stuff. That itself led into Sami Zayn versus Bronson Reed. Can Sami overcome Big Bronson before the big one? Yeah, he can. But right at the peak, Gunter drags a beaten up Gable out onto the stage, luring the Canadian in for a cheap attack, a big kick and throwing him into the Titantron. Strong words and stronger chops. A defiant Sami Zayn back on his feet, truly believing he can stand up to Gunter, before Gunter just wallets him back down with a shot with the title. The perfect momentum beat before the underdog needs to pick himself up for the fight. I really love this. Also, it says so much about Gunter, who is, yes, he's got his tricks to try and get you to not believe in yourself, but also the fact that he did attack Chad Gable does mean something. Because before, like, if Gunter didn't think he was a threat, he wouldn't have done that. He would have done stuff to just demean Sami Zayn, but he would never beat up his coach or anything like that. He's not that kind of guy. The fact that he is means that Gunter is actually a little bit worried. It's telling his like character through action. And I really like that. That there is actually, there's a little bit of doubt there in Gunter himself. Like, he actually thinks if they were there together that could be a problem. And Sami Zayn showed here that he is defiant enough to stand right up to Gunter. And him walloping down with that title was like the final thing of, that's the heel doing the last shot, that final move. Where it's just like, well, I'm just going to put you down because I'm having the final message. I love what this sets up for both characters. In this little instance here, when Sami Zayn gets back to his feet, Gunter, for the first time, actually believes what Sami is also starting to believe. It's not just Sami starting to believe, it's also Gunter. And that scares Gunter, and that's why he beat him up. I just love what it means for both characters. Before his match, Jey Uso bumps into Lil Wayne, who is sat wearing all black, so he's blending into the production boxes. I thought he was popping up like a Jim Henson Muppet before realising he was just sat on the box, because I just didn't see his clothes. Fun fact, I've got a soap dispenser during lockdown made by a Chinese company called Luo Wan. You can probably guess how we're pronouncing that name. Drew McIntyre delivering the grand CM Punk hater eulogy. January 27th, the world lost the opportunity to see an out-of-shape, has-been main event WrestleMania, when his brittle, fragile body failed him worse than he did in the UFC. Oh, it was so good. This was such a well-put-together video package for Drew McIntyre. Drew focusing on Seth and promising he'll be putting the champion's broken-down body out to pasture. Such a good VTR. Becky Lynch also came out to have her big brawl with Rhea Ripley, angry and pissed from Ripley bringing her kid into this feud. Ripley herself equally pissed at Becky's antics, all escalating from the aerial interview. The champion charging through Adam Pearce's security for a big old brawly ball, and the crowd were just as hot as they were last week. For me, that's like proof of job done, is not only were the crowd hot for it last week, but they were hot for it again this week. They are excited to see these two come together. And they've only ever like engaged like this in brawls, and them taking it out the ring as well, just to emphasise that. Like, we haven't seen them wrestle in like any real form. And that worked really well for this feud when they finally step into that ring. I thought it's been built up really well. And final production notes. I've worded the show openings as like you walking you into the arena. Well, this week, they took a step further and a camera crew rode the escalator up to Barclays Center and started making that walk towards the building. It's like, oh yeah, I just love the way that they do that, where instead of just starting it in the arena, they walk you towards the arena, then they will play a video package, then you'll enter the arena. Like, they slowly walk you in. Way better than a cold open in the arena. And it gives an identity to each individual episode because you get the identity of the city of where they are. Also loved how they filmed Ricochet's, is it 630? Is that the degrees correct number? They also used this shot during Rocky's corner posing, but the ring in the bottom left corner of the shot, the sea of fans, and then the WrestleMania sign in the top right. As I was talking about, it creates the picture of the arena so well, especially during the WrestleMania season. It's kind of like you're painting that picture of these are the reasons that they are doing what they are doing without having to like stop and tell you. Because they're like, Michael Cole could continue the action rather than having to deliver that fact, because you're being shown that fact. Like, they're doing it for the fans. They're doing it for WrestleMania. It's all there. and it's a sea as well. It's not just in the background, which you see every now and then. Equally loved the single walking shot of Kathy Kelly interviewing Seth before he walks to Drew McIntyre, who's like, I ain't dead yet, through Gorilla and out onto the stage and panning around him for the big pyro pose, up the stairs, into the ring, all of it in one single shot. Not cutting all the way to the ad break. The done is feet below the ground. Like, I was impressed and happy with the Randy Orton Logan Paul chase. And the single shot here was just as good. The fact it was like leading into an ad break as well. Like, it gives you like an even more of like an excuse to do it. It's like, we're going to cut to ad break anyway, so you don't need to do any fast cutting to up the pace to anything, because you're winding down for an ad break. Just keep it on a single shot. Perfect fan to do a long shot like that when you're not building to anything. And of course, it's the reverse as well. You can do the single shots that they've been doing when they're coming back from ad break, because that has the effect of easing you into it, rather than, we're back from ad break, here's five cuts in 5 seconds. It's like, oh shit, right, we're back. This was like, no, it gradually works you back into it. And that brings me to the end of the week of WWE. Lots of big production notes, and the nerdy production side of my brain is getting all excited for what they're going to do at WrestleMania. Yeah, the wrestling as well. Like, I'm not a big enough nerd to completely lost that side. Anyway, with that said, I say thank you for listening, liking, engaging in any form, any manner. Always appreciate it. Never take it for granted. I will be back next week to review WrestleMania Saturday, WrestleMania Sunday, and Monday Night Raw. And when I call it a bumper episode, in quotation marks, you know, that's just a normal length episode for everybody else. There's a very strong chance that this will be a bumper episode next week. I've got so much to cover, and I'm also obviously going to cover it in detail. I'm not going to fly. Even if I try and fly through WrestleMania nights and Raw, it's going to be closer to an hour. So I am planning to do a double length episode next week. So with that, I bid you adieu. Adios. Ta-ra, chaps. Ta-ra.